Welcome to Cacao's podcast. This morning we are joined by John Kinahan, who is at Regent's Park College and has been working on freedom of religion and belief since 1997. John is a member of the OSC ODIHR panel of experts on freedom of religion or belief, and a member of the OSC ODIHR advisory board on freedom of religion or belief and security. And we are really delighted to have you with us, John. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Miranda.
So, can I start off with a question, which is, why do you feel it is important for Christians to defend everyone's freedom of religion and belief?
Well, there are many reasons, I'd say, such as the statement in Genesis 1:27 that humanity is, quotes, made in the image and likeness of God. This contrasts sharply with contemporaneous Mesopotamian creation accounts, in which humanity is made as a kind of slave labor force for gods. One reason Christians should care about everyone's freedom of religion and belief has a personal name, Jesus Christ. The incarnation has extraordinary implications for everyone and for all of creation. God became a human being, living a fully human life. Christ's humanity tells us that everyone has the potential to bear God, and so has an incalculable value which no one can take from them. Our faith tells us that Jesus' resurrection means that everything that serves death and not life has no future, however great its temporary triumphs may be. So Christians are called to work for the end of the oppression of anyone, whoever they are. Attacks on freedom of religion or belief, or FORB for short, as I'll refer to it for the rest of this podcast, perhaps especially against people in dictatorships who do not share our faith, challenge us about our love of God and neighbour, which, Jesus told us, are the greatest commandments. Dietrich Bonhoeffer put that point this way, writing in his prison cell in August 1944, before he was martyred for his part in the July 1944 bomb plot against Hitler. Quotes, "The church is only the church when it is there for others." If we are to truly live as Christians, those words of Bonhoeffer's must be seen and to be a reality in our lives, as churches and as individual Christians.
What is the current situation on freedom of religion and belief in the areas where you focus your work?
The formerly Soviet states who live under dictatorships are very different from each other. But there are also significant similarities in the restrictions those regimes place on the exercise of human rights, including the freedom of religion or belief, or FORB. All these regimes are hostile to any independent activity by the people they rule, and their basic approach is to make the exercise of human rights conditional upon state permission. So all exercise of FORB without state permission and registration is illegal, and the public expression of the majority faith is either under total state control or run by leaderships who gladly collaborate with dictatorship. This state control seeks to be total, in Kazakhstan, for example, extending to the regime dictating how Muslims should pray aloud. Similarly common to almost all these states is strict state censorship of all religious texts and objects, including online materials. A common excuse for banning materials is that they are allegedly extremist, even though such claims are usually entirely arbitrary and evidence-free. And as OSC election observations have documented, the rulers and their puppet parliaments, as they call them, who impose such restrictions, have not gained power after having faced free and fair elections. One of the other similarities is that the laws imposing FORB restrictions are drafted in secret, often with significant input from the relevant secret police, with minimal to non-existent public consultation. Kyrgyzstan's latest highly restrictive religion law and associated new amending law in the area of religion are cases in point. The texts, as signed into law on 21st of January this year, were not made public until after the 28th of January, 7 days later, and came into force on 1st of February. Such laws have no relationship to justice, but are in reality tools to attack the freedom of all. The law bans a very long list of activities, and amongst other things, all religious communities must gain state registration every 5 years before they are allowed to exist or exercise FORB. To do this, 500 founders in any one locality must unanimously vote at a meeting to register and submit an application, including their identity documents, which the state can arbitrarily reject. In July, an Adventist pastor in Kyrgyzstan was jailed for 3 years after being tortured, and his unregistered church was banned as allegedly extremist. Muslim and Christian critics of the regime's FORB violations have been jailed and fined. So the reluctance of people to be identified with registration applications can, I think, be well understood. In all of these formerly Soviet states, people who have been arrested for exercising their FORB and other human rights without state permission have been tortured with impunity for the perpetrators. Sermons a regime dislikes can also lead to prosecutions. For example, in Russia, many religious believers who have opposed the war have been Russian Orthodox, both of the Moscow Patriarchate and other branches. One of the first to be prosecuted was Russian Orthodox priest Father Yoan Burdin, who the day after the 24th of February 2022 renewed invasion, preached a sermon condemning the invasion and stressing the importance of the commandment, "Thou shalt not kill." On 10th of March, he was fined 1 month's average local wages. His bishop backed the prosecution, and by 8th of April, he was no longer priest of his parish. Father Yoan is now in exile.
Those are striking examples. When we first spoke, you mentioned that we are coming up in October to the anniversary of last year's disputed elections in Georgia. And I wonder if you could tell us what's happening there generally and how that is impacting freedom of religion and belief in that particular state.
Sure. Georgia borders Russia, which invaded and seized some of Georgia in 2008. Indeed, Russian troops are now 32 kilometers from Georgia's capital, Tbilisi. And Georgians are currently facing rapidly increasing oppression from the Georgian Dream ruling party and their collaborators. The illegitimate government, which many Georgians, including the last democratically elected president Salome Zurabishvili, refused to recognize, gained power following widespread electoral fraud. Although the ruling party's police, who Georgians call robocops, have tortured many demonstrators, large-scale protests have continued almost every day since October 2024's so-called election. Many protesters display Georgian, European Union, NATO, and Ukrainian flags to reflect the widespread desire to live as a free democracy as part of the EU and NATO. The ruling party, which is closely allied with Russia, is now moving to ban all opposition political parties. FORB and other freedoms have been increasingly systematically reduced by the Georgian Dream ruling party and the powerful Georgian Orthodox Church, or GOC. Problems include, but are not limited, to repeatedly blocking non-GOC communities from building or regaining places of worship, the confiscation and demolition of Christian and Muslim non-GOC places of worship, with police violently attacking worshippers who peacefully protest against this, and discriminatory laws enabling the GOC alone to acquire state property and gain tax exemption. There are also very large and hidden state subsidies to the GOC. Since 2013, Georgia's Tolerance and Diversity Institute, TDI, has worked with religious communities of all faiths to help them be able to meet for worship and do the kind of things we in our churches do every Sunday and week of the year. One leader of a religious community told me last year that, quotes, "Our government is trying to do in weeks what Russia did in years." At that time, the regime introduced for the second time a so-called law on transparency of foreign influence, called by many Georgians the Russian law, sparking massive protest. The Russian law requires civil society organizations, including all non-GOC religious organizations, receiving more than 20% of income from abroad to register as, quotes, an organization serving the interests of a foreign power. The organizations targeted also include dog and cat rescue organizations which receive foreign funding. The Justice Ministry is given the authority to demand from individuals information on, among other things, their political views, ethnicity, and religious beliefs. This information must be provided immediately, on pain of being fined about 3 months' average wage, with no limit to the number of times fines can be imposed. So you could be facing every 24 hours a fine of about 3 months' average wage. Parliament, quotes Speaker Shavla Papashvili, who signed the law, claimed without evidence that, quotes, certain non-profit organisations covertly influence political, economic and security processes. Many Georgians, however, would agree with Professor Archil Metrovili, who's head of the Institute for Religious Freedom at the University of Georgia, that the impact of the law on human rights, including FORB, will be, quotes, both direct and indirect, and it will be devastating. As he and others have insisted, the government's real purpose is not to ensure public transparency of the finances of private organisations, including religious organisations, but to exert control. In a context where GOC hostility, openly supported by regime politicians and the State Agency for Religious Affairs, has led to overt discrimination and even extreme physical violence, Pastor Zal Tikishlivili of the Unregistered Evangelical Church of Georgia points out that, quotes, disclosure of the personal data of religious community members may cause further stigmatization in their places of work and beyond. Professor Georgi Miladsvili of Ilia State University states that, quotes, the law was specifically designed as an instrument to target others, and religious minorities should consider it a threat to their fundamental rights and liberty. Police used violence, including torture, with impunity against thousands of demonstrators against the Russian law. Many human rights defenders and protesters received threatening phone calls and faced direct physical intimidation. Bishop Rusudan Kotsaritsi of the Evangelical Baptist Church, for example, noted that she and other clergy and people in her church receive anonymous threatening phone calls and that, quotes, these unknown people from different countries, as phone records indicate, were calling dozens of people around me and even swearing at them. Like many human rights defenders, Bishop Rusudan, whose church has long openly supported LGBTI people and other marginalised groups, knows she is under covert state surveillance. She told me, I know we could easily be targets of the government now this law is enacted. She is also concerned about the impact on human rights defenders, such as the Tolerance and Diversity Institute, or TDI. As she said, now, if anyone infringes on my rights and targets me, I know whom to call. I know whom to call if I need a lawyer's help. If human rights organisations don't exist, it means that everyone will be silenced, and those who won't be silenced may eventually end up in prison. It is a very terrifying prospect. Pastor Tekleshudi fears that without the support of human rights organisations, religious communities will not be able to protect their rights. As he said, if, after the adoption of this law, human rights organisations are not able to function, we will face the rise of extremism, fanaticism and violence, with religious communities left unprotected. We will go back to darkness, which we left behind after a long fight and paying a high price. As Professor Metrovili observed, The only religious organization that can confidently be said to be exempt from this so-called law on transparency of foreign influence is the GOC. This is despite the potential concerns about its political connections with the Russian Orthodox Church, which is virtually equivalent to the influence of the Russian state. Repression, including direct targeting of TDI and other human rights defenders by the secret police and regime thugs, has rapidly increased from 2024 onwards. All of TDI's activities are about to become illegal under laws passed by the regime's puppet parliament. This includes the Grants Law, which bans all activity, as well as the receipt of foreign grants, unless the regime allows this. The personal penalties for non-compliance are twice the amount of the grant, with extra fines of roughly the monthly minimum wage if individuals refuse to be interrogated or provide allegedly false information. These fines can be imposed immediately and doubled for repeat crimes. Such penalties are in addition to penalties imposed under the Russian law. 2 weeks ago, in mid-September, the so-called Anti-Corruption Bureau hand-delivered letters to around 30 civil society organisations, including TDI, demanding that they hand over sensitive financial and other data, including personal information about everyone they've been in contact with. The letters gave no legal grounds for the demands, which are illegal even under the regime's laws. Yet appeals have resulted in courts copying and pasting regime reasoning into judgments upholding the regime's illegal actions. Georgians from a variety of faiths have told me that if TDI is forced to close, they will lose the chance to gain their freedom of religion or belief. Many human rights defenders are being forced into exile as they and their families, including infant children, are directly targeted by regime thugs. After they receive the letters, TDI, along with 20 other civil society organisations, publicly stated that, quotes, "We continue our activities and legal efforts to stop the enforcement of repressive laws. We will use all available legal means to protect our rights and the rights of the citizens of Georgia." This courage is also found amongst the religious communities TDI works with. At the time of the Russian law's passage last year, I took part in a meeting TDI organised in Georgia for religious communities, state officials and civil society organisations. During the public discussion, an imam who has long worked for human rights in Georgia, a calm, gentle and thoughtful man, asked me what others should do if he is arrested, a very possible scenario for him. I asked him what he would like others to do if that happens. He replied, and I quote, "I want them to carry on working for justice and to be kind, for even the smallest such action builds a better world."
Thank you, John. I think most of us listening to this are going to be both alarmed by the situations you're describing and inspired by the courage and the kindness that the communities that are affected are showing under these circumstances. Where, as Christians listening to this, do we go from here? Where do we find hope? How do we go deeper? How do we pray? How do we act?
What gives hope? Where to go deeper? What should Christians pay? And what should Christians do are, I would suggest, different facets of the same question. The courage and integrity of people of all faiths and none in such dictatorships who reject regime oppression and work for human rights is a powerful source of hope. So is a strong theological understanding of humanity and the incarnation, as I suggested at the start of this podcast. Where to go deeper is related to this, as these dictatorships are hostile to documenting reality. They target anyone they see as actually or potentially outside their control, often claiming security, extremism, or terrorism, to justify violating four and other freedoms. So it is vital to ask what exactly regime claims mean in concrete reality. For as human rights defender Václav Havel commented in 1978, because the regime is captive to its own lies, it must falsify everything, observing that, quotes, it is a world of appearances trying to pass for reality. So one starts by relying on sources of truthful information, such as Radio for Europe at rferl.org, Human Rights Watch at hrw.org, and Forum 18 at forum1818.org. These can be supplemented for particular countries, such as George's Tolerance and Diversity Institute at tdi.ge, Civil Georgia at civil.ge, and the Kazakhstan International Bureau for Human Rights and the Rule of Law at bureau.kz. Some regimes have invited gullible foreign religious leaders to alleged dialogue meetings at which they praise the relevant regime's alleged tolerance and avoid all discussion of their host's serious human rights violations. So don't believe claims coming from such meetings, which flagrantly contradict reliable sources about the reality of such regimes. This leads into what Christians should pray and do. Two important steps would be this. Firstly, to regularly pray for the people and human rights defenders who live under dictatorships. They very much appreciate the support of people outside of their context. And, secondly, to encourage people to do what they can to help people living under dictatorships struggling for freedom. This can be as simple as just talking about the situation in such countries. You never know the connections of anyone you might talk to. Or it might also be taking action for prisoners, such as those listed by Frontline Defenders at, as one word, frontlinedefenders.org. As the Georgian Imam said, even the smallest such action builds a better world.
John, thank you so much. We will be putting a transcript of this with links to the organizations you've mentioned so that people can easily find them on the website. And I hope that we will all take the opportunity to follow up with prayer and action. But in the meantime, thank you and a thanks through you to your colleagues.
Thank you very much, Miranda. And I would say all the thanks goes to those who actually stand up for human rights in such contexts, and indeed those they work with.